Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the non-alcoholic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Matthew. Good afternoon, Matthew. This is a Sunday. No one is working today. This, of course, is the day after quite a big night, the night before, and yet we are here. This is commitment. I sent a text to someone earlier, and I won't say exactly what they said to me, but the fact that I sent a text that was work-related today of all days, and you can imagine the response I got, and yet here we are. Recording a podcast.
Grinding it out. It should be a day of rest, traditionally a Sunday, but also a day of celebratory rest, shouldn't
it? Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're here. And yes, non-alcoholic. I am drinking a BrewDog, a non-alcoholic BrewDog.
So there are other brands available, of course, but this is your chosen tipple of late.
Yeah, it is. And I'm drinking it today for no other reason. I actually drink it now most days. I've got quite hooked on it. So I was having like a glass of wine quite regularly, and I thought, I don't really want to be doing that every day. So I just did a simple swap, and I do really like these. So again, not sponsored by these at all. But yeah, it's just a bit of a nicer alternative, I guess.
So this is all part of the process, isn't it? I feel like we're going on a real journey with you and your fitness and your nutrition. We've spoken extensively about popcorn.
Yeah,
Now we're on non-alcoholic beer.
The problem is this is the Richard Lee guide to getting fit, which isn't really working. It's still going the wrong direction. You know when you see these graphs and you can see that it's just out of control and you're just trying to stem the tide a little bit. In fact, let's bring this back to football in some way. This is where a team is on top. Now, at the moment, weight gain is on top, okay? I can't seem to stem the flow. So I'm just trying to find a way to reverse the pattern and get back to my playing weight. So I'm trying everything.
Okay.
It's good. Do you want one? I've got a couple more in the fridge.
No, I don't drink. Okay. Don't drink beer, mate.
It's non-alcoholic.
Don't drink non-alcoholic beer either.
Right, okay.
No.
Okay, your body is a temple.
Well, you know, much like yours was when you were a player. Yeah. Did you feel like you were in tip-top shape as a player? I know that sounds like an obvious question, but you sometimes see footballers and you think, oh, wow, you're not as ripped or as cut as I might expect.
I did for most of it. In fact, there was a time when I created a fitness DVD. If you haven't seen it, by all means, it's available in most good shops. It is on DVD.
We did give many away for free, remember?
Do you know what I say that? I don't think it's available anymore.
Well, I doubt it.
It was on one website, and I'm pretty sure it's not even available on that anymore. But no, around that time, that was probably the best shape that I was ever in. And I did. I felt really strong. If I look back, that would have been the period of time, certainly, that I was at my fittest. But I think that as fit as I was back then, it has gone to another level now. You know, for what was okay back then, coming back for pre-season, the sort of body fat percentage that you could be is so much lower now. You know, from memory, I think it was like 14%. You had to be like 14% or under when I was a bit younger. Now, 14% now would be considered a beast in elite sports. So I think now I'm pretty sure it's under 10% for most clubs. So, you know, certainly the bar has been raised a lot recently, and a lot of the different techniques and ideas that they've got when it comes to fitness and well-being, so much further advanced than they were back in my day. It makes me sound so old.
What about your peak? Because you spoke about your training session that you did with David Button a couple of weeks ago. Is that the type of thing? Because it was very different in your day. And when we say your day, we're saying mid-noughties, which isn't that long ago, right? Football was still, or it was, the high-profile sport that it is today. But there wasn't that feeling of players doing their work outside of pre-season as there is now. Players, 2 weeks, you had the pre-season, that's quite popular, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And actually, John, I was probably a little bit ahead of my time in that. I'd always see that six-week break as firstly an opportunity to rest. That first week, I'd always make a point of doing absolutely nothing. But I think the next 5 weeks, there's only so much of doing nothing that a professional footballer can do. At some point, you're going to want to do something. And if anything, it was a bit of an opportunity to get a little bit of a head start, you know, not just see pre-season as the time that you get fit, ready for the season. So for me, it would be doing a lot of plyometric sessions. I remember one summer, probably my best summer before it turned out to be probably my best season. I was only 21, 22 at Watford. I did so much plyometric work. So it'd be lots of heavy squats, bounding, lots of different jumping exercises, fast feet exercises. That coupled in with a lot of distribution work. So I try and do that sort of stuff rather than, I know a lot of the lads, for instance, will go out and do a run, which for me, I thought it wasn't really worth me doing that in the summer, especially as a goalkeeper, because I thought I wanted to do something that's going to benefit me as a goalkeeper and not necessarily just ensure that I come back in shape. So yeah, I would go really, really heavy with the plyometrics to the point where, you know, I'd have DOMS for most of the week and I'd have to manage that quite carefully. But certainly there was a couple of seasons when I came back and I felt so, so powerful. But I say that, and obviously I did that back then, and I do know that most lads now, certainly most goalkeepers that I speak to, they'll do that type of training now in the off season. They know how beneficial that is. So I think I was possibly a little bit ahead of my time there, but certainly now I think most lads, they use the summer as a time to get even fitter.
Okay. Holy tangent.
There you go. It all starts off with a brew dog and it leads to football somehow.
It does goalkeeping specifically.
Goalkeeping specifically. And we've got quite a lot of goalkeeping talk. Even though there's only four games, we have got quite a bit to talk about.
We have. Yes, we are going to get on to those Euros quarterfinals in just one moment. But a bit of correspondence first, Richard. We've had a tweet in. Now, I don't know how qualified, if I'm honest, you are to answer this question, but it is from Baldy at JustPete1971. Any tips, he says, from coaches on moving from 9 to 11 aside? Session plans, technique, psychology. I've got 3 or 4 girls at Arnold Eagles FC making the leap next season and want to make the transition as easy/fun as possible.
It's a great question. We spoke about this off air because it's one that I wanted to bring up. But at the same time, as you mentioned, it's not something that maybe I am massively qualified for, given that back in our day, again, it does make us sound old, but back in our day, it was 11 aside. I remember being 6 years old playing on an 11 aside pitch, which was crazy when you think back. And I'm so glad that things progressed and they are now how they are, where you gradually move up through the age groups and the pitches get that bit bigger. And of course, the goals for a goalkeeper get that bit bigger, because I do remember as a 6 year old playing in a full size 11
just
aside.
Just bonkers, isn't it?
Crazy.
It's mad. You just had to have one player on your team or a few players
who could kick it high.
Yeah, who could just kick it high.
If you could kick it high, you were screwed.
Scoring worldies every week.
Getting lobbed, unfortunately, that didn't change. It didn't change much later in my career. No, but it was. So no, I'm not massively qualified, to be honest, to answer this. That being said, I know, and I do get asked it a lot in terms of goalkeepers moving up through the age groups, because, of course, the goals do get bigger. And look, a lot of it, of course, is just getting used to your new surroundings, you know, getting used to where your posts are, understanding your angles that little bit better. But as I say, it's not something I want to get too deep into, just for the fact that I know there are a lot more people out there better qualified than me to answer that.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to get in touch with us and have your question actually answered.
Yeah, I'll just sit on the fence again. So apologies to Baldy. It was a very, very good question and I've given you no answer.
Try again, Baldy. I reckon you can come up with something better next time. Mm. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so at GK Union on Twitter, hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Okay, here we go. Ukraine 0, Richard. England 4 in the quarterfinals of a European Championship. Can you believe it? I've read some stats, and they are that 7 consecutive clean sheets have been kept by England for the first time in the country's history. They've not conceded now for 662 minutes. Jordan Pickford, 5 clean sheets at the tournament thus far. No keeper has ever done that in the opening 5 matches of a Euros, and no keeper has ever kept more in a single staging of the competition before. I had a quick look at this and I found one who has kept 5.
Go on.
Who do you reckon?
Oh, you're testing me now. Is it a World Cup?
Is it what, sorry?
From a World Cup.
No, I'm talking about the Euros, sorry.
Ah, right. One who has kept 5 clean sheets in a Euros before. I am going to go with an Italian goalkeeper.
I wouldn't if I was you.
Okay, in that case, I'm going to go with a German goalkeeper.
I would not do that either.
In that case, it has to be Spanish.
It does.
Iker Casillas.
Correct.
Yes. There you go. First time. Boom.
First time with the edit. Yeah. 5 in 2012. Yeah. Conceded just once in the 6 games that they played in that tournament. And most in total, 9 clean sheets across the 3 Euros that he's played. Just a quick one. Mm-hmm. Most goals conceded ever in the Euros. Who do you reckon that is?
Okay. Is that a name I would know?
It is, very much so.
Okay. Most goals conceded in the Euros. It would have to be, I'm guessing, a lesser nation.
Kind of middle. They've won it and they've been in a final since.
I feel like this is one of those, how many questions do I get in order to get to where I need to get to? Are they still currently playing?
Are they still playing? Oh, the goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper, yeah, yeah.
No, retired a couple of years ago.
Okay. I'm going to go with Thomas Sorensen.
No.
Okay, go on, who?
Petr Cech.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
21 goals conceded.
Of course, but he played in a lot of games.
He did.
Okay, that makes more sense. Okay, there we go. The goalkeeping quiz continues.
But let's talk England. Let's talk Jordan Pickford. Let's talk the semi-finals coming up against Denmark. Another good performance, another clean sheet. An accomplished performance from the whole team at that.
Yeah, exactly that. It was one of the most relaxing games of football that I've watched for a very long time, which I didn't expect it to be. Obviously, getting the early goal was very important. And I think from Jordan Pickford's point of view, I thought very, very good again. There's a couple of bits I want to mention. So the save itself in the first half, I thought was very, very good. And not much made of it because it's one of those you'd expect him to make it near post, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, the fact that it was a mistake, he's had to backpedal quite a bit in order to get himself into position. I thought his set position was very good. He does play with his hands quite low anyway. And for this particular save, he just had to manufacture a position in order to kind of shovel it around the post because it's in that little slot where it wasn't quite there for the collapse save, wasn't quite a pickup. So it was just in that horrible little slot, which can catch keepers out from time to time. But I thought he did really well just to kind of shovel it around the post. But I thought it was a very, very good save and important time as well. I think the score was 1-0 at the time. Decent save in the second half where the ball was straight at him, you would say. But the fact that he's managed to get it as far away from danger as he has, I mean, his whole body went with it, which, I mean, I don't know if he necessarily needed to do that. But I think he was just so focused on getting a really firm contact on the ball and ensuring that it got as far away as possible. In the end, his whole body effectively kind of went into ensuring he got the power in order to get it away from goal. So now I thought generally very, very good. I thought it bugged me a little bit that Jermaine Genius made a point of discussing him in the second half, suggesting that maybe he wasn't quite as focused, or that was the gist of it, where he did come out for a through ball and tried to do like a side volley away, didn't quite catch it and cause a little bit of chaos, but they got away with it. And then there was one other thing in the second half where he's just pulled a kick with his right foot, which, you know, ordinarily he catches them very, very well, but that was it in the entire game. But just the fact that Jermaine Genius made the point then that he needs to get his focus back and kind of spoke for a good 15, 20 seconds about Jordan Pickford, kind of highlighting something that for me wasn't really there, you know, saying he needs to calm down, he needs to refocus. And I didn't really think that was the case. I thought he was focused again throughout. I thought 2 very small individual moments, but other than that, I thought he was very, very good. Very good punch as well.
Yeah, it was bizarre that, you're right, Jermaine Genius speaking about Pickford in that way. It just goes to show as well, doesn't it, that tournament football, international tournament football, is such a different beast because every game is like an entire season in itself.
Maybe, but I suppose my worry is that it's then buying into the narrative that we spoke of before about Jordan Pickford, and maybe the Jordan Pickford that has at times and is at times rash for Everton, or certainly has been in the last season or two. So it was kind of buying into that, and I guess that's where that will follow him, in that if he does have a moment or two that maybe isn't quite as composed, then it's an easy thing to bring back up. But I actually think in this tournament, you know, look, ordinarily you play a game like he did yesterday, it's an 8 out of 10 performance, solid in everything he did, an important save first half, looked dominant, commanding, communicated well, distribution on the whole was very good, and you just had a slight miskick with your right foot and a through ball that you read very well, by the way, but just didn't quite execute when you got there. For me, that's an 8 out of 10 performance. So I don't think then you need to make a point of the cliche comments that will get labelled against Jordan Pickford from what we've seen over the last year or two. I actually think he has looked very, very focused, and certainly going into the semi-final, I'm very, very confident with him in goal.
At the other end, we say goodbye to Georgi Buschan, the Ukrainian goalkeeper, who's had a good tournament, conceded 4 yesterday. And we can talk about the first goal, maybe the third goal too. I'll get your points on those. But first, let's talk about the save he made from that Harry Kane volley. What a volley from Kane, but what a save from Buschan.
Just a very, very good save. Because it's one of those that, and again, goalkeepers listening in, you'll know what I mean here, in that you might not be set for something like that. You know, the ball's up in the air. To actually track the ball with your eyes to then set and explode to your left in the way that he did, there'll be a lot of goalkeepers out there that are not even considering setting in that moment, because you're not expecting a left foot strike from 30-odd yards to be flying in the top corner. So credit to him, because you actually watch it again in slow motion. He's ready, sets well, moves very, very well, and it's a fantastic save. That ball should nestle in the top corner. It's a brilliant strike, and it was a very, very good save. And look, on the whole, I thought he was good again. I mean, you could talk about minor things. Things on the first goal at point of impact. Is he as big as he could be? There was a slight turn of the chest, and again, it's really nitpicking. Certainly no error there, but in a perfect world, maybe you could just square the chest and that might just give you that little bit more chance of making the save. And on the third goal, I don't think there's anything you can do there. It's one where ball's been crossed in. Harry Kane's headed it from, 6 yards. He's tried to retreat to the line. Didn't quite get himself set, but of course his legs were open. And as soon as it's headed down with power, it's one of the places that you're just not going to be able to save it. Had it been a yard or two right or left, which kind of goes against the cliche of if it had been either side of him, actually, if it had been either side of him, he probably saves it because he'd have been able to react right or left. But the fact that it was straight through his legs, there's nothing you can do.
Okay, well, that sees us through, doesn't it, to a semi-final on Wednesday at Wembley between England and Denmark. I saw a great tweet yesterday from a gent named Craig Stoddart, who said that the game will see two goalkeepers who made their senior football debuts at which club? You've got Kasper Schmeichel and Jordan Pickford.
I am going to go. This is going to be quite difficult, isn't it? Senior debut. Are they currently... We're doing this again. I'm going to ask for a clue. Are they currently in the league?
They are not.
Darlington.
Correct. Very good, Richard.
Thank you.
Just needed one question there. I didn't even need to ask that.
I tell you what, that was like the a little bit of deduction. I thought with Jordan Pickford, it's going to be a club up that way. So I was thinking, is he going to be like a Hartlepool or something like that? But I knew that he'd started somewhere like Darlington. And he was very young from memory as well, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He went on loan to Darlington in 2012. Obviously from Sunderland, Kasper in 2006 on loan from City. But a great story for Darlington to see those two goalkeepers in the Euro semi-finals. And of course, Denmark are there because they beat Czech Republic 2-1. Kasper Schmeichel made a few good saves in this one.
Very good. Very, very good. And the other story that no one's really spoke about, the fact that Peter Schmeichel won the Euros back in 92, I want to say.
I think a lot of people have spoken about this, no?
Are they really?
Well, yeah. It's quite a common narrative, isn't
it? Who else has spoken about it?
What do you mean?
Has this been spoken about in the past few days?
What, that Peter Schmeichel won the Euros with Denmark in 1992?
Well, the fact that Peter Schmeichel won the Euros, Peter Schmeichel's won numerous Premier Leagues, Kasper Schmeichel's now won a Premier League, yeah, and he has a very, very, very good chance of winning a Euros.
Yeah.
Is this a regular topic of conversation?
Yes, Richard. I think that connection's been made quite a few times.
Is it really? Okay. I'm not watching enough of Danish football then.
There was quite a good article, actually, in The Athletic, which spoke specifically about that topic and the fact that, if we are going to bring it back around to this, that Kasper has now made a name for himself in his own right, really, in Denmark. Because, lest we forget, he never actually played professional football in Denmark. His only connection to Danish football has been through the national team. I believe there was a point early on in his career, because it took him a lot of time, because Thomas Sørensen was the number one, wasn't he? So he didn't get his pro debut until he was 26 for Denmark, his international bow, I should say. So there was a period of time when I think it was discussed as to whether he could be an England goalkeeper, much like Robert Sanchez, much like Manuel Almunia. Remember that? Let's get him in for England.
Carlo Cudicini.
Another one. Yes.
All these potential England greats.
That were not English whatsoever. But that was the point of the article. And that's more the discussion now, that he is a Schmeichel in his own right and has actually spoken about the fact that he's not really spoken to his dad too much about 1992.
Well, there you go. Okay, it kills my point completely then.
That's the story, isn't it?
That's the story. But this is it. Like, you look at, and this is where, without speaking too much about the semi-final, which is due to come, and I guess we're looking at it very much from our perspective, years of hurt, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, in terms of a story, I just think that could be the most incredible story. One that no one had even thought about until I mentioned it just then.
It's like no one's really talking about this. Everybody is talking about this.
I'm not watching enough of Denmark, am I? But okay, fine. Let's talk about Kasper Schmeichel's performance then, because apparently I'm a little bit behind on this one. So look, I thought he was excellent again. I thought he was, because for me it was, without necessarily having, you know, the FA Cup final moment, the game-winning save, et cetera, it was just, again, very, very solid. I thought the spread to his right, incredibly brave, timing was good, came out with speed, made himself very big, just a really good save down at feet. I thought the fingertip save he made to his right hand side, a bit of an awkward one, ball struck into the deck. It's always going away from him, shows good speed to get to his right. And then arguably the most impressive thing was the interception of sorts that he made. Ball going to the far post, going to be headed into an empty net. And again, a lot of goalkeepers, the simple thing to do here is to turn, set on your line and look to make the save. The fact that he shows the speed and the game understanding is probably what I'd say, in order to read the game and know what's going on and just get the fingertips to the cross in order to get it away, I thought was excellent. And yeah, he's a major, major reason as to why they're in the semi-finals.
Switzerland won, Spain won, Spain winning 3-1 on penalties, and Jan Sommer saving one of those penalties, and some save two from Gerard Moreno in that game to take it to penalties. A great performance from him, a great tournament from him. And actually, Unai Simon was given the Man of the Match award for this game.
Was he?
Don't know whether you saw his quotes.
Go on.
Honestly, he said, I'd have given it to Jan Sommer.
Well, there you go.
Mm.
Which is very honest of him. I thought Unai Simon was very good. Do you know, I was really pleased for him, actually, given that he had the error in the previous game. And watching him play, again, lovely lesson for young goalkeepers watching. The way in which he played, body language was very strong. And I thought he was very, very solid throughout. For me, it was written that you felt like Jan Sommer was going to win that penalty shootout, though. You know, you got to the penalty shootout. The fact that Switzerland down to 10 men, clinging on for the last 20 minutes of the game, then the half an hour of extra time, the save he made, the point blank save. There was a couple of saves, actually. I didn't feel quite got the credit that maybe they deserve. Certainly when they did the analysis afterwards, I thought they were going to go a little bit more overboard on a couple of the saves in particular. But no, certainly the one from point blank. And then the one he made to his right, which I think got the classic, it's a good height for a keeper comment. That again was a really, really top save. And I know we're going to talk about a couple of similar moments in the Italy game shortly, but similar to the Donnarumma one where you are full stretch to your right. And that is all the stuff we were talking about earlier, all the plyometrics that you do, that work in the gym. That's where that comes in, where it's step, step, bang, off you go. Brilliant, brilliant save.
10 saves in that game, which is the record for this tournament. So no other goalkeeper has made more saves in a single game at this tournament. He's been consistently good at international tournaments in recent history for me, Jan Sommer. Has been good for Borussia Mönchengladbach as well. A lot of people now are saying, crikey, he should be playing for a bigger club. So he's 32 years old. His contract runs for a couple of years yet at Mönchengladbach. Do you think that now, maybe, the time might come for him to move to a bigger club? Or is he not considered a bigger club goalkeeper?
I mean, look, potentially, there's always a lot more to it than that. You know, you look in the Premier League at the moment, would we love to see him in the Premier League? Absolutely. I'd love to see him play over here. But then you look at where the available slots are and what it would take for him to potentially take one of those slots. Well, for a start, there's not loads in the Premier League. He'd have to come as a starting goalkeeper. I can't imagine he'd come as a number two, even at the top clubs. You know, for me, I think he'd have to come as a starting goalkeeper. So yeah, there's a lot more to it than that, especially if he has got a couple of years left on his contract. But certainly, if there is a chance, I mean, there's been a few over the years where I've always thought I'd love for them to come over here. Manuel Neuer being another good example. If there were any chance we could have him in the Premier League for a season or two, I'd love to see him over here. But you know, at times you kind of feel like it's unlikely because, more often than not, because of contractual situations. Like, I've got no doubt that a Jan Sommer would love to play over here, for instance, but it's just the fact that all the other bits that need ticking, obviously the financial aspect, is just very, very unlikely that anybody will get to the amount of money that's needed, especially for a 32-year-old.
I also fear with goalkeepers like Jan Sommer, and I could be doing him a disservice here, but I feel like he's put in that bracket of goalkeepers that no matter what they do, they never ever build up enough credit. Do you understand what I mean by that? I think if he came to the Premier League, all it would take was one or two mistakes in successive weeks. It's like, yeah, no, he's actually not that good. He's not a big enough name.
Yeah, I think you always wonder, what is it that makes or puts a goalkeeper into an elite category? You know, at what moment was it that Iker Casillas became elite? David De Gea became elite? You know, I could list another 10, 15 that straight away you talk about world-class goalkeepers. Everybody says the same ones at the moment. Ter Stegen, Oblak. Like, it's almost something that people will say without necessarily putting much thought into it. It's just considered, no, they are the elite goalkeepers of this present time. So how does a Jan Sommer go from where he is? Now, more often than not, it might actually be playing for a top team. I know that sounds ridiculous, but of course, if you're a Manuel Neuer and you've spent your career at Bayern Munich, it's only a matter of time, providing you are as solid as he is, that you would put in that category. You know, if you played for Manchester United, Man City, Liverpool for enough time, that might be an argument. I mean, look, it's one that I don't know if there is a set answer to this, and I'm always keen to hear people's thoughts on this, but it does seem like you have got an elite category of goalkeepers, which, oh, the other one will be trophies, of course. You know, they've won a number of trophies, but again, we know as goalkeepers, there is only so much you can do as a goalkeeper a lot of the time. You know, you can do your job incredibly well and be in a team that gets relegated. So as a metric as to who the elite goalkeepers are, winning trophies will never be a particularly good one. Even a lot of the stats out there, you could argue, aren't particularly good, given that there are so many nuances to being a top keeper. So look, it's a conversation that could take us down various paths. But I do hear what you're saying regarding Jan Sommer. And look, my gut says that he's probably not overly disappointed being considered in that next category, if that's what he is by the masses.
You mentioned Unai Simon. Just to finish on that, Koke, his teammate, of course, said he has such big balls, which he obviously did to save those penalties in the shootout. And you said that redemption arc from that game against Croatia. He also said, Koke, that what he did afterwards was incredible, with great tranquility, great use of language, which Gigi Donnarumma actually also used. This is something about goalkeepers, or maybe it's something in the translation that we have to English.
No, goalkeepers are just more intelligent.
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it? In their win over Belgium, Gigi Donnarumma said that game felt interminable. Oof. What a great way to describe it.
Really good. We're going to move on to that game now, aren't we? This is what you've done. You've nicely segued into talking about Donnarumma. So not only is the guy a genius, he's a fantastic goalkeeper.
That's exactly what we're going to do, because you, my friend, have spotted something in this game.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, would I say spotted? Is that what I'd say I've done? I spotted?
Basically, you flagged something, an aspect of goalkeeping that I hadn't really factored in.
I did send you a voice note with a thought, just to leave it with you, just to see what you thought. And I get the impression that you agree.
I do, yeah. When I first saw the goal from Insigne, I did think that maybe, I don't want to say Courtois could do better there, because that's the cliche that we try and avoid on this podcast, but I did think that maybe he didn't get himself over with enough power. It looked like he went with both hands too, as opposed to what Donnarumma did from the save from Kevin De Bruyne.
So this is the point I was going to make, which is, I'm watching those two moments, and of course, you can never compare two moments because there's so much more that's going on. Just to give an example, the Kevin De Bruyne strike that Donnarumma saved, I think in that moment as he's about to strike it, he knows the chances are it's going to his right-hand side, Donnarumma. If you actually like calculate the fact that there's a defender covering the other post, the fact it's outside of his boot, isn't it, the way in which he strikes it, you can see that Donnarumma's weight is ever so slightly on his right-hand side. I think he predicts it and gets a really good, powerful dive away. So you could argue that that was a different strike to the Insigne one, but similarly, he's a similar yardage out, I'd say 20, 22 yards. In terms of power, I'd say there was very little difference in the two. I think the Insigne one, you could even argue, went half a yard inside the post, and Courtois didn't quite get the same dive away that Donnarumma did. So the point I made is just that it's interesting for this game, which was largely even, I'd say. You could say that Italy maybe just edged it, but I thought it was largely even, certainly in terms of chances. And two moments where, for me, a moment of brilliance from Donnarumma, and it was a beautiful, beautiful save to get to his right hand side, the speed at which he showed. Again, this is where, if you are 6'7" and you've got that kind of immense power, he's got a fantastic frame on him, the way in which he got across, and it wasn't fingertips either, got a good hand to it to keep it out, and Courtois wasn't in the moment able to do that. Now, as you said, you would never in a million years put any blame on Courtois. It's not one where I'm looking at it thinking, oh, could you do more? For me, it's more a case of what Donnarumma did was superb. You know, the fact that he's still at this point not conceded more than a single goal in a game for Italy is just insane. And I thought he was brilliant. The more I've watched of him this tournament, the more I see what all the hype is about. I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast, in that I know Asma Begovic, obviously with him at AC Milan, and can't speak highly enough about him. And I'm seeing it more and more. You know, if you were to design a goalkeeper, he just looks so, so powerful and mentally so tough. And to have the number of games that he's got under his belt as a, 22-year-old is he now? I mean, it's just phenomenal.
He could go to Buffon lengths, couldn't he? Buffon levels.
Yeah, I think he could. I mean, look, again, I've probably not seen as much of him as other goalkeepers, but the more that I've seen of him in recent times, as I say, I can truly see what all the fuss is about. And he really does look like he's got the mentality of a top, top player as well. You know, you could see even the moment where Lukaku missed that chance where great block on the line, but, you know, you could see the passion in him, like how much it means to him to keep the ball out of the net. Now, I know that should be a given for any goalkeeper, but I think most of us know that it isn't. You know, to have a goalkeeper that has that kind of mentality, such a winner in the way they are, so competitive, just love seeing it.
Yeah, we'll see more of him next season, won't we? Champions League with PSG. Of course, he has played in the Europa League, but it's fair to say that Champions League gets a few more viewers. So that is something to look forward to next season. Just to finish on this one, there was a little shushy from Romelu Lukaku after he scored his penalty, wasn't there?
There was, and I don't really know what this relates to. I'm assuming it's something to do with Inter and AC, I'm guessing, because either that or maybe something was going on before in the game. But by all means, if anyone knows exactly what that's referring to, then do let us know.
Anyone ever give you a little shush after a penalty?
No, let me think. No, I did have a couple of Panenkas against me. A little bit different, but where there was one in particular where I was on a really good run of saving penalties and someone did a Panenka and they said something to me. I can't remember what they said now, but yeah, it was really annoying because I was on a really good run and I thought I had him. I thought I knew where he was going. I've gone full to my right and then it's just trickled down the middle of the goal and he definitely said something Peterborough way. I can't for the life of me think what he said.
The player? Remember?
Yeah, the player. Who scored? You could probably Google it, but it was a 2-1 defeat to Peterborough when I was at Brentford, so we'll be 2010. We can find out.
Do you know what? We'll find out right now. Hang on. Okay, so we found it.
You seem very pleased with yourself.
I don't know why I'm pleased. I just like the fact that I found it and the player. So this was the fifth minute. A fifth-minute penalty. Does this sound right?
Yeah, it sounds right. I was still pumped up. I remember I was still... the fact I'd literally just come off, must have been a week or two before, or a few days before, saving... Might have been the three I saved against Charlton, maybe.
Oh, it was, yes. So it was 10 days after you saved... No, sorry. It was about a month after you'd saved the penalties against Charlton. Yeah, okay. That was mid-December. This was the 11th of January.
Okay. So go on, who was it?
Grant McCann.
Oh, yeah.
Hull manager, yeah, Grant McCann.
Yeah.
And you can't remember what he said to you?
No, I can't remember. No.
Okay, just an FYI, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 games later,
yep.
You received a red card.
Yeah, sold short on a back pass.
Were you?
Yeah, and the guy went round me and I used my hand. Then that was a 1-1, but I thought, you know, it's fine, I'll save my team. And then they scored from the free kick.
They did, yeah, 2-1. Yeovil.
Yeah, the Oval. And then Andy Scott, the next game we played Dagenham when I was suspended. We lost that 4-1 maybe. And then Andy Scott went. And I think that was when then Mark Warburton and Nicky Forster became manager. I mean, we are going down memory lane here. I'm sure for anyone that doesn't have any interest in Brentford, this has been a really tedious couple of minutes. So we do apologise.
At some point, we will do the Richard Lee podcast where we actually focus on your career.
I'll be fascinated to see how many listeners we get for that.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
GK's on the way, I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way, I say GK's on the way.
Yes, it's that time in the show once again. It's been a busy few days. Bearing in mind, it's only been a handful of days since our last podcast. There are 6 goalkeepers to talk about, which we will do right now. Okay, we start with Man City. Been very busy. Man City in the last couple of days. In fact, I'm going to talk about both goalkeepers that have gone from City on loan, both to League One clubs, both young goalkeepers, both very highly thought of. James Trafford, of course, played many games for England, helped Man City to win the Under-23 League last season. He's gone to Accrington Stanley on loan, so he'll have a fight with Toby Savin there for the jersey. A very good loan for him. And the highly rated Gavin Bazunu, who, of course, was at Rochdale last season, he has gone to Portsmouth in League One. So again, he'll have a fight on his hands with Alex Bass. It'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. But of course, Bazunu getting games for Republic of Ireland as well. So, yeah, very, very good loan for both him and Pompey there. A couple more to talk about. Mark Oxley has gone from Southend to Harrogate. Daniel Barden, of course, came in for a number of games for Norwich last season, their promotion season. He's gone to Livingston, so a really good loan for him. Something that you could argue was needed. He had a bit of a taste of it last season, did very well in Tim Krul's absence. So a good SPL loan for him. Simon Moore, of course, we haven't seen loads of Si in the last, I say Si because of course I know him from my Brentford days, we haven't seen loads of him last couple of seasons since they've been in the Premier League, but of course it was a big reason they got to the Premier League, performances in League One in particular and in the Championship. So he's gone from Sheffield United to Coventry, so you'd like to think that he'll be starting in the Championship next season. And last but not least, a great one for a friend of the show, Mr. Tom Heaton. He has gone from Aston Villa and he has gone back to his boyhood club, Manchester United. I'm really fascinated to see in what capacity, because I'm assuming it's as a number two. But of course, if it is as a number two, then there needs to be some movement in front of him, you would think. But I guess we will see in the coming weeks.
Very good, Richard. Let's just labour on that final one there, Tom Heaton, before I come back to you for your opinion on a tweet that we've had in, and just a bit more about Tom Heaton. Of course, he started his career at United, like you said, was there from the age of 11, I think it was. Funnily enough, played under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the reserve team boss at United way back when. We spoke to him about this on the podcast, which is well worth a listen to. And in fact, here's a quick snippet just about his early days at United and the goalkeepers that he played with.
Edwin was fantastic. He was very, very strong-minded, knew what he wanted and he was willing to get it. I think that sort of hit home to me, you know, what he required in training, what he required of the defenders on a match day, what he required in terms of his preparation. He made sure he got it. You know, I thought he was absolutely fantastic for Manchester United. My hero growing up as a goalkeeper was Peter Schmeichel. There was a little bit of crossover when I was there earlier. I saw him a few times in training and he was absolutely incredible, as we all know. But in terms of actually working with him, it was a bit early for me. And as he sort of transitioned out of the game, Edwin became that role model for me. And then to work closely with him was brilliant. You know, his thinking and his ideas were at such a high level. And it made me think more about my game, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to add in. Technically, he was excellent. But the biggest feature for me was the calmness that he played with. You know, he had an incredible presence, as Schmeichel did. But they were almost opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, there's different ways to skin a cat, but they both played with a massive amount of presence, and that composure from Edwin was something that I've tried to add into my game as the years have gone on.
You touched on a couple of bits there, and I wanted to dig into this a bit, because I remember we were, obviously I was a couple of years older than you, so very aware of your progression elsewhere at the time. The big thing for me was intelligence as a goalkeeper, but also technically. You know, you're always very, very solid when it came to your technique. Going through the youth age groups at Manchester United, was there a particular coach, or was it the likes of Van der Sar, Schmeichel, where you had mentors above you that you were able to feed off? What was your approach? How did you get your technique to where it is now?
Technically, I knew I always wanted to be right on it. I mean, I was very fortunate to have worked with some great coaches at Man United. And I think there's probably a mix of both, really. Having top people, top players to work from and around and with, and then top coaching to go with it. You know, there's numerous names that I work with at Man United. Tony Cotton was obviously a first-team coach there. I had a little bit of time with Eric Steele. Rich Hartis had a massive impact on me, you know, all the way through, really, because he brought me up through the academy and then he got the first team job as well when I was in amongst it, which was great. Dave Rouse, who's now at Man City, had a big impact. Dave Ryan very early on. Even just from that list, yeah, just at United, you know, you're talking about six, seven, eight coaches that have all added something in. And I tried to be like a sponge and take the ideas from them, put them into practice, see if they worked. And I was very sort of analytical in how I went about it, saw what worked, discarded what didn't. And tried to go from there, really. And I think getting the basics to the highest possible level was always something that was drilled into me from a dad, really, at a very young age. So that's probably the route that the technique came from.
You just touched on your dad there. I was going to ask you about motivation, because it's always interesting speaking to different goalkeepers as to what, with want of a use of a better term, like their reason why. What was the reason that helped you get to the level you got to? You know, 11, 12, 13 years old, kids your age are off doing all sorts of different things, yet you're having to train however many times a week, play a game every single weekend. What was the biggest driver for you at those younger years?
It's a very good question, that, and I've often wondered myself a little bit about my background. I mean, I think I wasn't from a wealthy family, but didn't want for anything, if you like. Both parents were teachers. You know, I had a really nice childhood. I look at it, I'm not quite sure where that drive came in, but it was certainly there. For me, I wanted to be a Premier League goalkeeper. I wanted to be England's goalkeeper, and I was going to do anything to get there and consistently do as much as I possibly could. I remember growing up playing in four or five local teams, you know, the Cubs, the Sunday League teams, the local side, and playing as much as I could. I played outfield, I played in goal. And I remember one of the older kids saying to me, yeah, you know, you love it now, but in 3 or 4 years' time, no one enjoys any football anymore when they get to 15, 16. I remember having sleepless nights when I was 12 thinking, am I not going to like football anymore? I think it was actually a real worry for me. I can't put my finger on it, to be honest, but I've certainly always felt it. I've always felt it in abundance. I feel it now at 33 more than ever. You know, the fire's still burning. I still want to get better. I still want to improve. There's still things that I want to achieve. So I'd probably look at my parents in terms of doing everything you can to get to where you can get to. That's probably the ultimately who it came down to that installed it in me.
So that was Tom Heaton there. I do urge you to go back, and we recorded that, gosh, it was a couple of years ago, wasn't it? So it was when he was still at Burnley. He says he's 33. He's a bit older than that now, but a really good podcast, isn't it, that one?
Oh, brilliant. I think when I look back over a lot of the podcasts we did, and a lot of them were different themes, I guess, but Tom for me, or Heats, as he's known to his close friends, which I'd like to consider myself. I don't know. He's one of the most meticulous goalkeepers that I've ever come across. And I don't think he'd mind me saying this, in that if you were to look at him, or if you were to design a goalkeeper, you know, look, Tom Heaton, he's not 6 foot six. He's not, we talked about Donnarumma earlier, you know, he's not got that kind of stature. So if you were to look at him, you wouldn't necessarily say that. And I've got to be careful what I say here, because look, I'm a couple of inches smaller than Tom, for instance, but you wouldn't look at him and necessarily say that he has got the build of an elite goalkeeper. But the fact that he's got the mentality and the drive that he has is why he is an elite goalkeeper, and why he's had such an elite career. And the fact that he's going back to United, and again, I'm fascinated to see in what capacity. My gut says he'll find a way into that team at some point. You know, I know just how professional he is, and it'll only take for whoever it is ahead of him to have a slip up or two. And if he gets his chance, he'll take it. You know, he really is, for all the people we spoke to on the podcast, you would certainly say attention to detail, him, Kasper Schmeichel, maybe a handful of others that you'd have in that category, but that was about it.
Well, on that note, so Lee Grant has signed a one-year contract extension, so he's there for another year. We had a tweet in from Dan Cohen, who tweets us a lot, good friend of the show, who said that Manchester United current goalkeeping department is 1 De Gea, 2 Henderson, 3 Grant, 4 Heaton. You have to assume that one of the top two is on the way out, or do you, with Heaton going in as number two and Grant remaining number three. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, I can't see Tom Heaton being a number three. I'm convinced he isn't. I think it's exactly that. I think Grantley stays as a three. Some of the teams are now having four keepers. I get that. I almost call it an insurance policy now, that the way the rules are for Premier League clubs, you know, it's not like you're going to get a lot of help if you get a couple of injuries. So you certainly need three top class keepers, if not four. But I can't see Tom Heaton being that number three. You're right. I think he will be a two. It's just who the number one is. And of course, it's going to mean that something needs to shift. But despite some, I'd say, small rumours, there's no obvious move or obvious club that's being linked with Dean Henderson or David De Gea. So I guess we're just going to have to see how the next few weeks play out.
Fascinating times.
It is indeed in the goalkeeping world.
Richard, I think that's us.
That is. Longer than anticipated for just four games of football, but there you go. Even on a Sunday, the day after England beat Ukraine, here we are. This is what we do.
Once you start talking goalkeeping.
It's like once you pop, you just can't stop. We are the Pringles of the goalkeeping world.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, I forgot your name there. Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.